We'll call the House Rules Committee to order at 5:11 on the 31st of May?
May Day.
We're finally here. Apologize for starting a little bit late, and I appreciate your patience in the audience. For the record, we have Speaker Phillips, Representative Porter, Representative Williams, Representative Elton. Present, we do have a quorum in the order of business. We'll start with Senate Bill 122, House Bill 474, and House Bill 28. We have someone from the sponsor's office on Senate Bill 122. We do have a committee substitute that has been drafted up. It is version L. For the record, Board 43098. This is the working document. Remove it. President Porter.
Mr. Chairman, I would move that we adopt the working draft version L of committee substitute for Senate Bill 122.
Hearing no objection, adopted. Please state your name, affiliation for the record, and tell us why we should pass this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Robert Pearson. I'm an intern for Senator Lauren Lehman, chairman of the Senate Labor and Commerce Committee, who originally sponsored this bill. And just a short description. This bill would provide equity for Maryland family therapists on a par with a number of other health professionals, including mental health professionals, in what you might be described as equal opportunity or protecting them from unfair discrimination in insurance policy matters.
Is that it in a nutshell?
That's it in a nutshell, Mr. Chairman.
Prime sponsor, hearing Representative Elton.
Just to confirm, the only change between this version and previous versions is the effective date.
I believe that's correct.
Representative Elton, that is correct. It gives the insurance companies time to make the necessary changes to conform to the Representative Phillips.
Mr. Chairman, I have to say that this intern is starting out right, and possibly we could hire him to do some training sessions with our members of our body as far as presenting brief testimony in committee.
I recommend you start on the ground floor. Further questions for sponsor staff? Seeing and hearing them, thank you very much. Is anyone else in the audience who would like to testify on Senate Bill 122? Seeing none, Representative Porter.
Mr. Chairman, it gives me great pleasure to move and ask unanimous consent that CS for Senate Bill 122 Rules, Version L, be passed from committee with individual recommendations and zero fiscal notes.
The chair stands the motion. Is there objection? Seeing or hearing none, the bill is moved. Let's take up House Bill 474. Unfortunately, I recognize there are a few more changes in this bill than the previous one. So we do have a member of the prime sponsor's office. Please state your name, affiliation, and record. Tell us about the changes and why you think it's a good bill.
My name is Kevin Jardell. I'm the House Judiciary Committee aide. Originally, Mr. Shaw, representing the Alaska Police Standards Council, came to the Judiciary Committee and asked that we introduce legislation that would allow the Police Standards Council to regulate and require training of municipal corrections officers. Mr. Shaw, in a few minutes, can explain a little further on what the identified problems were. The Judiciary Committee heard the bill. We drafted it. We thought we were on the same page. After passing the bill, in distributing it amongst corrections officers throughout Alaska, there was some concerns raised that what we had done was required municipal corrections officers to meet the same standards as all state corrections officers, and that standard would be too high to allow for a sufficient hiring pool throughout some of the rural areas in Alaska. So what we did is we went to a CS and we redrafted the approach so that there was a new classification created of municipal corrections officers that was separate and distinct from the normal corrections officers. That was placed under the authority of the Alaska Police Standards Council, and by doing that, it would allow them to create specific training programs and hiring requirements that met the needs of municipal corrections. That's the CS before you. In substance, I don't think there's a major change. The idea was to allow the Police Standards Council to begin setting some standards and overseeing the municipal corrections officers, and I believe the CS does that in a more appropriate manner than the original version of the bill.
Thank you. We do have a CS before us. It's stated 41598 Luckup version E. It's working draft. Anybody have that?
All I have is A.
There we go.
Yes, I do.
President Porter.
Chairman, I would move that we adopt newly acquired version E of CS for HP 474 as our working draft.
Hot off the press, version E. There's a motion to adopt. Is there objection? Seeing or hearing none. We do have version E before us. Laddie, do you want to make any comments?
My name is Laddie Shaw. I'm the director with the Alaska Police Standards Council for the record. And in a nutshell, I'm available for any questions.
Laddie, can you tell me what the changes are?
Oh, the changes are primarily to allow us to regulate the municipal corrections officer specifically. The standards that we originally had set were at equal to the level of the state correctional officers, and we adjusted those accordingly. They're still receiving the same amount of training, but they're under municipal authority versus state authority.
Okay. Questions for Laddie? President Porter?
Will they be certified by the Police Standards Council?
Through the chair, Representative Porter, yes, they will be certified through the council, but a separate certification than the state correctional officers. They will be certified as municipal correctional officers.
Representative Phillips.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Laddie, for all the corrections officers that are in the community jail system, those will still all fall under the state standards, won't they?
Through the chair, Representative Phillips, that is correct.
And what communities would this new classification affect? Would that be Anchorage, Fairbanks, or who all would that affect?
That would affect any of the communities with small jails.
That aren't part of the... How many are there that are not part of the community correction facilities that we have?
How many are...
Yeah.
There are 17 community jails.
Right, but... But are we talking about jails separate from those 17?
No.
Okay.
Further questions? Seeing or hearing none, is anyone else in the audience like to testify on House Bill 474? Representative?
Can I ask a question, Mr. Chair?
Please let the record reflect that Representative Clyde joined us.
I just have a question about the fiscal note. It says that... that there will be training of $1,500 per officer, and that the fund would come from the Alaska Police Standards Council? Or is that what this is saying, is that the funding will come from the Alaska Police Training Fund?
Through the chair, Representative Nicolai, yeah, that is true. They are already under our budget. We have already trained a class, and so in the existing fiscal note, there is no additional dollars for this program.
So that... The question of that is, will this funding come out of the funds that is to train police officers and
yes, they will.
LBPSOs, so training the correction officers would have an impact on that fund.
Through the chair, Representative Nicolai, yes. Because our budget primarily is to support police and correctional training statewide, bringing on the municipal correctional officers will be part of the funding that exists under our budget.
Okay, that answers my question.
Okay. Representative Phillips.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Laddie, one other. Do the municipalities have a match in that training money?
Through the chair, Representative Phillips. there isn't a match directly. The surcharge is supported by each municipality in the state, but as far as a match to that surcharge, there is none.
Further questions? Seeing here, and then we'll close public testimony then. Representative Nicolai.
I need to ask a question to that. Because it's, cause, I mean, I could see, or that might be a problem if you've got money to train policemen and VPSOs. And is this currently under the regulations now that, that the correctional officers can take money from those funds? Or is this a change?
Through the chair, Representative Nicolai, no, they are already under our regulatory authority, and they do, our budget does support them, primarily in in-service training. We do not support, we have not historically supported the correction officers.
You haven't offered training, the $1,500 before. This is a new item, $1,500.
Through the chair, Representative Nicolai, we have supported one class. We graduated 13 municipal corrections officers in September that we did fund out of our existing budget.
At $1,500 per person?
Okay. Further questions? Seeing or hearing none, we'll now close public testimony. This is the will of the committee. And in light of Laddie's high school football team beating mine.
You're going to keep it in committee?
I'm going to punch this out of committee.
Mr. Chairman?
Representative Williams.
I'd like to move committee substitute for House Bill number 474, version E, out with individual recommendations and accompanying fiscal notes.
Do I understand the motion? Move out of committee Bill 474 with individual recommendations and zero fiscal note. Is there objection? Seeing or hearing none, the bill's moved.
Mr. Chair.
Don't push your luck, Laddie.
I thought you were much older than Laddie.
Looks are deceiving. Okay. Next, turn to House Bill 28, Appeal of Coastal Zone Management Program. Take a brief at ease. Okay, we're back to order now. We have sponsored staff for House Bill 28. Please.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Sarah Fisher-Goda, staff to Representative Terrio. Just, I guess, real briefly, I can tell you the change from work draft Z from the finance version. We changed the language regarding the coastal zone boundary. There was an amendment up in finance that did not pass, but Representative Terrio wanted me to continue working on trying to address some concerns regarding the boundary issue on the bill. So the version that you have in front of you changes section 4 of the bill. It requires that a consistency determination outside of the coastal zone is not required unless the activity is on federal land and affects the zone. It also clarifies that the area of the coastal zone that went beyond the 1979 established boundary is not required unless there's a direct effect on coastal waters or the activity requires a Title 16 permit. I believe you're provided a sponsor statement that outlines the bill. The bill does not repeal the Coastal Zone Management Program. The original bill did. This CS does not. It's each version of the bill does less and less. There's just some few specific things that this bill addresses. If there are questions on the boundaries, I believe I can answer those.
So we do have working draft version Z, Glover 4398, Ms. McCullough Express.
Plus C.
Z.
A tort reform bill. And he went through that.
116.
I think tort reform had double E. When,
double E, yeah.
We were double letters.
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to move committee substitute for House Bill 28, version Z as in zebra, as a working draft?
There is a motion to move from committee.
No.
No.
Just checking to see if you're right. There is a motion to adopt version Z as a working document. Is there objection? Hearing or seeing none, we have version Z. Does that conclude your testimony then?
I'm here to answer questions for you.
There are questions. Representative Phillips.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Sarah, my first basic question, whatever in the world caused an Interior Alaska legislator to introduce legislation on coastal zone management?
Through the chair, Speaker Phillips, Representative Terrio has told committees, Resources Committee and the Finance Committee, he although he represents the Interior, he's familiar with the resource agencies and their budgets for the last 6 years now, and he has to look beyond the borders of his district in looking at legislation.
Good answer.
Very good.
My question to you is, can you summarize for me the input from the coastal communities as far as this legislation is concerned?
Through the chair, the obviously the repeal was not well received, and so we went back to the drawing board and tried to look at some distinct areas. There has been some concern, and I did receive a copy of this Cook Inlet Keeper facts that was given to me a few minutes ago. There's been a lot of, I think, misunderstanding on the various versions of the bill, and one of the problems that I've found is that the short title of the bill still says repeal. And so Mr. Shalveson's letter on one of the concerns is
Mr. Shalveson.
Thank you. One of his concerns is that it guts the program. The bill does not gut the program. There's no such threat of federal takeover, mainly because this is a voluntary federal program that we adopted back in the 70s. So there is no threat of a federal takeover. It's not like a primacy for the air program. The bill, I can outline the sections of what specifically the bill does now. I think we've answered and responded to most of the concerns of individuals regarding their concerns on the process. And I think what we have left, I think it does restrict the program a little bit, but it doesn't repeal the program. I think Representative Terrio has had a concern as far as how far the boundaries can go inland, and what permits and regulations or what type of duplication this program has caused over the years.
President Porter?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Could you enlarge on why there's a difference between whether the borders are all federal lands as opposed to state or municipal or private lands?
When the federal program was implemented, they specifically stated that federal land could not be within the zone. So regardless of how you drew your boundaries, any patch of federal land would never be in your zone. So we had to address that somehow. You can still require a consistency determination if it's on federal land, but it has to have some type of spillover impact into the zone. So you could have a patch of federal land that does affect, that there's some activity on there that does affect it, but you could never draw your boundaries to include it. And so we just needed to clarify that, because one of the things that Representative Terrio wanted to do is that districts set their zones, and once the zone is sent and we have the coastal area, he didn't think it was appropriate for a consistency determination to be required outside of the zone or the district. There was a Supreme Court case that had kind of highlighted this, that these people waited to get their trapping cabin permit on state land for years, finally received it, but they had to go to the Supreme Court to do it. And the point of contention was with the coastal district. And it was, I believe, about 100 miles inland.
Further questions for Sarah? else in the audience that would like to testify on House Bill 28? Please.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Diane Mayer, and I'm the director of the Division of Governmental Coordination, which is responsible for overseeing the implementation of the Coastal Zone Management Program in Alaska. I'll just make a few remarks very specific to this bill. The two sections of the bill, I think, warrant just opposition to the bill. One of them is Section 4, and that's the section that you just discussed that Sarah pointed to regarding the standard of review and how different areas of the coastal zone are treated based on the boundary conditions built in this legislation before you. The second is the repeal of petitions to the Coastal Policy Council, which hasn't been mentioned yet. I might open by just mentioning that coastal districts, in response to the question of what have coastal districts said about this bill, we have formal resolutions against this bill, obviously not this version, but elements of the version of the bill that's before you have been in other bills and have been specifically cited in resolutions of opposition ranging from Anchorage, Sitka, the North Slope Borough, the Kenai Peninsula Borough. So there has been, I think, rather broad opposition to the repeal of petitions, for one. And the tinkering with this coastal boundary issue, if I can just take a minute to describe the problem we have. Alaska has 34,000 miles of coastline, and when Alaska bought into the coastal program 20 years ago, we created an interim boundary, and it was called interim because coastal districts were going to do separate programs more specific to their area. And as coastal districts came online examining their coastal zone, they modified those boundaries to be sensitive to resource values within their specific area, obviously doing a much more detailed job than the state did on the first cut at 34,000-mile mapping job. What this bill does is say when those districts expanded the boundary from that initial interim boundary, it was expanded because coastal districts felt there were coastal resources, largely anadromous fish, but we can use that as a good example because it's the simplest one, where spawning areas, rearing areas, freshwater areas that were beyond that interim boundary definitely affected the important coastal resource of anadromous fish to Alaska. What this bill does is say, in those cases where a local community fine-tuned its boundary and expanded it, what this legislation says is they can't work the process of coastal management unless a project affects all the way down to saltwater. So you're skipping over managing that spawning and rearing area that you were concerned with. The bill does provide, if you're in the upper reaches and you need a Title 16 permit from Fish and Game, where you're actually building something right in the creek or in the stream, that you can work with the project. But there are issues of sedimentation, water discharge, a lot of ways to affect that important fish resource without actually, working in the stream. So what we set up here is a case in this bill where coastal districts have taken from them the opportunity to interact on projects through coastal management that affect important resources that they've identified in their program. The other issue of state and federal land is an important one. The amendment that was just adopted tried to solve a problem, as Sarah described it, where federal lands within the coastal zone were deleted in the last version. But the amendment, as it's set up, now sets up a deal where federal lands outside of the coastal area but affecting it are subject to coastal management. But the identical project on state land, which might be immediately adjacent to it, would not be in. So we have a double standard where we'd have to go back to the federal agent, to the federal funding agency, and say, well, we have a new deal in coastal management now, and the state is not holding itself accountable to the same standard of review with local governments that the feds will be held accountable to. So we have double standards. We have a review procedures built in where you have to prove effect on coastal waters rather than on anadromous streams to have the program go into effect. And essentially what we try to do in coastal management is timely get in there, figure out what permits are needed, and run a review. But under this system, we're going to have to do initial analysis just to try to determine if projects in the upper reaches of the coastal boundary are even subject to the program, and we consider that unnecessary additional analysis for no gain in resource benefit at all.
Sarah, does that conclude, or Dan, does that conclude your comments?
I would be available for questions. We could talk more about petitions if you like.
President Porter.
Thanks. I had the fiscal note from your office, but I have it dated 3/4/98. Is it still relevant to this version?
The fiscal note that we submitted was changed.
Resources.
No, resources. We submitted a second one then to finance. Finance amended it, and I never got any paperwork back from them. They cut it back substantially. So money that we had asked for coastal districts to engage on this was deleted from our request.
I guess there's one in the packet that's 4-4-1. I mean, why we still have this one?
The earlier version.
The narrative would be relevant, but what came out of finance is not what we asked for going into, so it was substantially cut, and the money to the grant line to coastal districts to handle the changes was also cut.
I understand that. if I understand your testimony, that there is some process of review available to the local area that under this version is not now, would not then be available. Is that, I guess my question is, are there no other mechanisms for that review?
The review, through the chair. First, yes, there will be areas within coastal districts that will not be eligible for the benefits of coastal management, but that were designed to be, so there is a reduction. The review that they would get is unique in two ways. One, coastal management consolidates applications for federal and state agencies. It brings the applicant together with the local community, and it actually runs a more holistic look at a project where people can do it once and do it where they can benefit all the expertise around the table and their problem solving as a whole instead of a more, you know, linear process to do that. So you lose the opportunity to bring the players around the table to problem solve. And the second thing you would lose is local communities, when they design their coastal program, identify enforceable policies that they want from the local perspective to be applied to projects that affect their coastal zone. So if you unplug the program from project reviews in the coastal zone, as this does in the areas where the districts have expanded that boundary, you lose both the ability for them to have their standard of review on the table, and you unplug the players. You get, you know, you just walk around door to door.
I guess, and I don't know if you know it off the top of your head, but in a main river system, Copper River, who is the local group that you would be in?
Does the river outside of the river? Yeah, that's outside of the river. That's not a particularly good example.
Kenai River is the example where the Kenai Peninsula Borough is the coastal district. It is the government entity. There are a couple gaps in coastal Alaska where you don't have a district, and only the state piece of the program applies. And parts of Prince William Sound, Kenai River, parts of Southeast, only the state rules apply. But generally, the local government if there is a local government, is the coastal district. The exception to that is when you're in western Alaska, where there is no, it's unorganized area, but people have organized into coastal districts. The current state statute allows people to elect a board and create a coastal resource service area and then become the entity you talk to in the unorganized area to
what qualifies you to be a people who can do that?
You have to follow the rules of Alaska, the Alaska Coastal Management Act, that sets out exactly what you have to do to become a coastal resource service area. Then you actually have a local election, and you elect as part of during the local election, they elect people in the unorganized area to the board.
Geographic boundary miles from the river, or how do you determine whether I can vote on that or not?
Isn't it the REAA?
Based on regional education.
Gabrielle is our district expert. Gabrielle LaRoche, we could invite her to just.
So within the REAAs?
Those are the initial boundaries. They can vote to subdivide them, but they start with something that we have on the books in the state. But in cases like the Kenai River, where the Kenai River is a good example because there the interim boundary, the local community did expand the boundary to take in the fisheries resource of the Kenai River.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, just one final thing. The linear process that you described
mm-hmm.
is still there, and if someone has got some concerns about a particular economic development project or trapper's cabin
mm-hmm.
having an effect on one of our resources, there are still other mechanisms if this were not in effect to pursue that, is there not?
Through the chair, there are other permits that would apply to the project and would continue to apply. The significant shift is the standing of the local community is simply you can just comment. Coastal management really gives a local district who has an approved plan standing in the process to be a stronger player, and by in their program defining local policies of importance to them, those become part of the decision criteria on permitting. If you take that away, yes, there still are permits, but you definitely have reduced the ability of local governments to influence projects that affect them.
Diane, does the current proposal before us then eliminate the petition process that is, I guess, currently available to the policy council for those specific projects?
Yes.
What impact will that have on the communities or the projects that may be considered?
The current, in 1994, the legislature took on the freshman petitions. They changed the law, and the law as it currently stands has communities or citizens of districts who've commented in the process, who feel their comments weren't fairly considered, they can go to the council and say, basically, government isn't hearing me. The council's authority is simply to remand it. If they believe that the record shows there was no consideration there was not fair consideration of comments, they simply remand it for further consideration. If they do believe there was fair consideration of comments, they just deny the petition. What this bill does, that process, that since 1994, that simple process has been used 7 times under 2,100 project reviews we've done in Alaska. People argue, well, it's been used so rarely, it doesn't make any difference if we get rid of it. On the other side of the argument is, because it's there, communities do get that extra attention because nobody likes petitions. I don't like petitions. You know, they're kind of a pain. All of a sudden, you have to go through the record and set up this board. It's done. There's a 30-day window. Start to finish, you get it done. But the truth of the matter is, because nobody likes them, that extra consideration is given. And districts enjoy they enjoy the leverage it gets them to be heard. And it is effective since even though they have this authority, it's only been used 7 times in 2,100 project reviews, means that they've been getting satisfaction out of the process. So I say keep it. Why get rid of it? There has not been a record of abuse.
Representative Elton. Thanks, Mr. Chair. through the chair, Diane, I guess one of the concerns that I've got is the language on lines 19 and 20 on page 4. Those are two of the lines in section 4. Whose responsibility is it to make the determination on whether or not the activity affects the coastal zone area? Is that the coastal district? Is that your office? Is that the applicant? I mean, whose responsibility is it to make that determination?
Our office would determine it, but we would determine, if it wasn't obvious, and usually it's pretty obvious and not disputed, if it required some thinking, we would talk to the coastal community as well as experts within the resource agency and get a feel from the technical expertise that's out there to help us. But it would be a call DGC would make. Looking at those lines, if I may, through the chair, this is where you have, was it 19 and 20 you were talking about? Outside and inland of the coastal zone, so you're outside and inland, so you're basically above it, you know, down to Charlotte. You're above the coastal zone. What it says is you may not adopt regulation procedures unless you're outside and inland of the coastal zone, unless the use or activity is on federal land. That's where you set up. Well, if it's federal land outside, then you can do it, but the same project on state land or private land right next to it, you can't. And it creates a problem when we go back to the feds and tell them, we have a program that gives equal treatment to coastal impacts, and it very specifically here is setting it up where it's uneven based on ownership. And the change was made to address, as Sarah said, the problem of federal lands inside the coastal zone, and it fixed that, but then it created this one with lands above the coastal zone, essentially. We're not there yet, is what it is.
So, Mr. Chair, I'm going to rephrase. So the net effect is you could have two similar projects located, one on federal land and the other not, that would be treated differently.
Definitely, under the coastal program.
Mm-hmm. Further questions for Diane? Hearing none. Thank you, Diane.
Thank you.
Anyone else in the audience to testify on House 28? Sarah, you want to make some closing comments?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And a lot of questions I hope you might answer in your closing comments is why we need to get rid of the petition process.
Okay.
I heard it was rarely used, but is there another?
I can address that first. Representative Terrio has felt like the petition process has been a potential for abuse, and there has, in the sponsor statement, we did address the concern on the petition process that the local program, there is a seat at the table with the local program, and it should address the concerns of the local government and the individuals of that district. If the district, as a voice of its constituents, disagrees with the proposed consistency determination for a project, they may elevate the proposed decision through the resource agencies and through their directors and to their commissioners. So there is still that avenue for districts to have their project or have the project reviewed, the consistency determination on a specific project. I guess I don't think there's any other program in the state that as an individual citizen, if I have a difference of opinion with my local government, that I can petition a state entity to have that decision reviewed. And that is the main reason. The other portion of the bill that does address the concerns of the actual program is that we do allow in the bill a section where regulations may be adopted to periodically review the program and also allow for a revocation if a district does not address deficiencies in their programs. So a program can be reviewed. The state can set up a procedure to do that and address deficiencies in the program. The other issue I wanted to address is the two-tiered system or the double standard. The one thing that's been a little bit difficult to kind of how to fashion this is, regardless of where you draw your boundaries, you're never going to be able to include federal land. But if they're adjacent state project and a federal project, you could always have your district boundaries include that state project. So once the district boundaries are set up, that would include all the state land. It would never include the federal land. So in some respects, the federal program handed us a program with double standards. And we would never be able to have – federal land is never treated the same way. If there's any additional questions.
Other questions, Sarah? Representative Elton.
Just a quick question, and through the chair. Sarah, under Section 8 that requires modifications in a one-year time period, who pays for those modifications? Do the districts pay for those?
The modifications that this is addressing is specifically if an entity or if a district adopts statutes and regulations by reference. Those are the modifications that need to be addressed within the year. That has been an identified issue that the administration supports that section of the bill to address those deficiencies, or if there are statutes and regulations that are adopted by reference, that those should come out of the programs. So that's the only one that we had that timeline on. So I don't have my notes on the analysis of the fiscal note analysis. It just didn't seem that would be an issue that would be that expensive or the burden. There's the federal dollars and the state matching dollars that pay for the entire program.
I could follow up. So, Sarah, what you're saying is you don't think any additional money is needed for either the districts or for the state to accomplish what you're saying they have to do within a year?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, through the chair, no.
Sarah, in Section 7, there are several repealers. Are all those repealers solely associated with the petition process?
Yes.
Any questions? Seeing none, thank you, Sarah. Again, there are no additional members in the audience. Please testify on House 28. Seeing and hearing none, we will close public testimony. Open up to the committee. Representative Phillips.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I am going to oppose this legislation based on the fact that my history with the coastal zone management on the Kenai Peninsula is longstanding, and the coastal zone management policy and programs have been a way for the people on the Kenai Peninsula to participate in the decisions affecting our coastline for many, many years. The program has a critical effect on the Kenai Peninsula, not only on our coastlines, but also on one of the most strategically important river in Alaska, that being the Kenai River. This affects many of the cities in our borough, but also the lands of the borough. Our Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly is opposed to this legislation based on the fact that they feel that the program in place now is the best representative program for the local people. I would like to read to the committee one section of the resolution from the Kenai Peninsula Borough Assembly and make a little further comment. Section 1, the Kenai Peninsula Borough supports the Alaska Coastal Management Program and opposes the committee substitute to House Bill 28 and other legislative efforts to reduce local option. And just recently we had a bill in here affecting one of our other communities where we didn't take action because the action would have been perceived to reduce local options, and we didn't take that action. So at this point in time, I am opposed to this. I think it would reduce local option, and I will not be supporting it.
Further comments? Committee members? Representative McClain?
Ditto.
Ditto what?
I'm
maybe with TI.
Mm-hmm.
You represent Pequena as well?
I have part of Pequena here on my district.
Yeah, she does. Mm-hmm. Bionic.
Mm-hmm. Bionic, that's right.
I mean, there's an, I agree with everything that the speaker says. It, it has the same kind of, I mean, coastal communities in Southeast Alaska have the same kind of issues to deal with. I can tell you that I think it's also an economic development issue. Getting rid of coastal zone management actually slows down economic development, projects. I mean, it's a pattern, and it's a system that Southeast communities are comfortable with and use, not to stop projects, to get from.
President Williams.
Are you ready for a motion, Mr. Chairman?
I'm still holding the segment open for discussion if you'd like to discuss your comments.
I choose not to. I think enough has been said. If you're waiting for a motion.
I don't have a lot of experience with coastal zone management. My limited experience tells me that I probably don't have the votes to move this out of committee, so we will hold it in committee.
The motion that we hold it in committee.
Further, I'm going to put it in the ward during this spot.